Hi, I'm Gina. I'm an alcoholic. And as you can tell, I'm a double-fisted drinker.
Because if one runs out, I always got backup.
So Lori had asked me to come and give her her marble, and I'm like, what? I'm thinking she left something at treatment that I'm supposed to have had in my possession this whole time, and I'm going, she says, no, this is what, when we get our 1 year, they tell us, they give us our marbles because we lost our marbles. I texted her back, or emailed her back, and I said, well, and I had this ginormous one at home I was going to bring. I said, I'm going to bring a screwdriver because knowing Lori, she has still, see, I wasn't ready for this right at the beginning. Okay, it looks like this. I keep it in my purse. It has three separate heads. My daddy gave it to me because that's what daddies do. They help their girls so that if you ever have a screw loose, you can fix it. I don't have to ask anybody for this one particular thing. So that's my shtick. Lori not only lost her marbles, but she had screws loose all over the place. No, I worked with Lori last year. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November. I haven't done this in a while, so I'm just a little... June 26th, 09. So, I'm also a lazy alcoholic, or a lazy addict. That's why I chose alcohol. I wasn't willing to go to do the work it took to do drugs. So to me, alcohol just was the easiest thing, especially when you're 16 and growing up in an area where the people that wore jeans to school and smoked cigarettes were the heads. Not that they did anything else, but really my story begins differently as far as my addiction. You know, it's that chicken and egg. Well, my addiction came second and then became my life. When I was four, I lost my grandfather. He was there one day, and then a few days later, he just wasn't. And I had spent a lot of time with my grandparents at their farm in Weatherford because my sister was born, got double pneumonia, almost died, you know. So I spent a lot of time with them. I had a lot of love and affection and acceptance and approval from my grandfather, and I knew it. So that's when the anger and frustration and abandonment began. And anger turned inwards is depression. Depression built and built and built. Anger built, acted out. And then when I turned 16 and sex, drugs, and alcohol became available, woo, that fixed everything for about 30 seconds or 45. I should have known I was an alcoholic from the first time I drank, and I just thought I was drinking something that was too sweet or drinking too fast or drinking on an empty stomach. And, you know, so I didn't even know that I was already working with myself on, how can I drink to drink like everybody else? Never occurred to me. So had a wild time into my 20s. Got my first DWI in 89. I got out on personal recognizance. I did a couple of like 2-hour classes. They gave me 3 months, you know, adjudicated, no big deal. Oh, okay, it's fine. So it wasn't again until 2004 that I got my second DWI. In the meantime, I had had children, a single mom, big old 9-pound boy who was 125 percentile, really wasn't drinking as much as it came to be, but had to have surgery on my elbow because he was so big, and the painkillers, and that helped. And when my mom left, the painkillers, chasing down with a glass of wine, was even better. But during that time, everything I did was based on before, during, and after involved alcohol. I knew I had a problem. I knew I couldn't drink properly. I don't know what proper meant. Now I've come to understand it's the inability to drink at all. In 92, I had my son. And in 94, I got really, really sick. And my doctor asked me if I had ever been tested for certain things. And I'm like, well, yeah, before I had my kid. It's like, no, not unless you ask. So, and this is something that I'd never shared while the clients are in treatment, but I feel like it's a very important part of my recovery is that, so in 94, I was diagnosed with full-blown AIDS. And by August of 94, I was on medications and I was undetectable. So it's like, okay, so God got me out of the first DWI. He got me out of abusive relationships. And in 94, AIDS was a death sentence. And I was full blown, 119 pounds, wasting syndrome, thrush, sick puppy. And as you can tell, no more wasting. Not having that trouble anymore. So I had this beautiful boy, and I knew that I could not end my life. And so the only thing I could think of was that, well, I'm just going to maintain my depression and kind of keep it at bay with alcohol. Things got worse and worse. I had twins in 97. At 6 weeks, they were both undetectable. They did not have the virus. 4 days later, I lost the little boy to SIDS, and he was in my arms when I was feeding him, and he quit breathing. I did CPR, called 911. They did the whole, it just wasn't to be. They were 3 months early. And so when they did the autopsy, he still was negative. And at 18 months, my daughter is negative. She is now 20 this year, will be a junior in college studying petroleum engineering. And the worst thing she's had happen is that she's lived with her raging alcoholic father until she was 15 when I got custody back. And she doesn't have any issues except she's a grump once in a while. During that time, after I lost Grayson, the father blamed me. We went to court. He tried to bring up in court that I was an alcoholic. I had the history. I had DWI. I had public intoxication. The day that they took my daughter from me, I was passed out in a car trying to get to a help center. And I had locked the car, the doors were locked, the air conditioning running, and I've got, a few-week-old baby in the car. She was 8 months, and then my four-year-old. And he fed her what we had. She's screaming, store people call, come and pick me up for public intoxication since I wasn't driving. And I lost custody of my 8-month-old daughter to a raging alcoholic. Of course, she went from one raging alcoholic to another. And I pretty much just dove straight into the bottle because that was the only thing I could think of. And so after a while, that just wasn't working. I couldn't function. My son couldn't function. And I started going to some meetings because I knew about AA. But you know, this isn't for me. These are people coming in, you know, they've lost their cars and their homes and their families and they're on bikes and they have to stay here at the 24-hour meeting overnight because they can't be on the streets after 7 o'clock and they don't have a place to go. And I wasn't like them. I tried that for a while. That didn't work. Of course, I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't really read the books because it hurt too much. Because it's like talking about me. And I really resented somebody from the 30s writing a book about somebody who was born in the 60s. The drinking kept on. The DWIs kept on. I got my third DWI within 3 years, but my fourth in a lifetime in February of 06. And I hit the big time. I had my daughter with me, so I was felony, no matter how you looked at it. I got sober. I mean, I was scared straight. I started going to meetings. I was working with two or three ladies from different meetings, doing everything that I thought I could do, but I still wasn't truly, totally committed. I was going through more than the motions, but I just wasn't getting it. I just wasn't ready. Then I decided after, you know, several months that I didn't need the meetings anymore. I was doing some cleaning houses and house sitting and pet sitting, and I was good. I stayed sober 3 years. And at the end of that 3 years, it's like, you know, same story. I got this. I'm comfortable. I've got this under control. I can just have one glass of wine. It's been a hard week. These houses with kids and dogs and hair and unrealistic expectations about what somebody coming into clean house can do in 6 hours. And within 2 months, then that went back to not just the small bottle over a weekend. That was a small bottle within 2 hours. It's like, well, it's just more economical if I buy the bigger bottle. Then it was like, okay, I can't walk out of here with six of these ginormous bottles. They're thinking I'm having a party every 4 days. My recycling was embarrassing. I never went outside when the recycling truck came because I could hear it when they picked mine up because it was all glass. And it's like I'm hiding in my garage so I can go and get my container. I'm hiding from the garbage bin. Because I'm already, you know, into the next bottle and it wouldn't fit. So I'm throwing away bottles for the next week. But that 3 years that I stayed sober, I was on probation for five, and I was sober for 3 years. Then I relapsed, came up positive on my breathalyzer, because I thought I was smarter than the machine, too. And that's one thing, and I tell all the clients, I told Lori this, I tell all my clients that, unfortunately for us as addicts, whether it's drugs or alcohol, but as addicts, we're smarter than the average bear. Our IQs are generally higher than those that don't use. If we would only use our powers for good instead of evil. But so I thought I had this licked, and if I could quit drinking at midnight, I'd be okay by 8 o'clock in the morning. And it just, you know, oh, it's the toothpaste. Oh, I had a cold. You know, my probation officer just looked ex-military looking at me. It's like, wow. I'm pulling up my pants because it's getting deep in here. So he's like, do this IOP, do this program, do this program. And so I did these things. They weren't working. Nothing was touching me to my very core. I could go to the mental health program, and that worked with my depression and how to keep from falling into those habits that addicts do too, isolation and avoidance and all that. But then I wasn't getting help for my addiction. So, okay, I'll go home and sit by the pool and have a drink. I'm not avoiding. I'm not isolating. I'm out there with everybody, right? So finally, my probation officer convinced me. He says, you really need to try this program. He says, you get therapy. You do your program. There's doctors available to help you with your medical needs. You get psychiatric care. There's counseling, peer counseling, counselor counseling. You can wear makeup. You've got access to sodas and coffee. It's just great. It's like a 3 or 4 month program, I think. Well, he had read the travel brochure, not the fine print. So I had not been given this when I got my felony DWI, but I asked for from the judge and signed up for God keeping me ignorant just long enough to save my life for Safe P. I had met other women doing overnights. They talked about it's a breeze. You go in 3 or 4 months, you know. Well, they're talking about living on the street and the hustle and no home and no security. So, this was a reprieve. This was a vacation. Well, did not know how stupid I was. So I called my mom. I was supposed to stay at home for 12 weeks until a bed became available, because in the medical unit, if you're on psych meds, that's where you go. There was a longer waiting list. So now I'm on disability because of my AIDS. And when I signed up for that, Social Security said, okay, you're incarcerated. No, I'm not. Yes, you are, as of this date. Had no income. 2 weeks later, I get custody of my daughter for 6 weeks for the summer. We went and bought $200 worth of groceries. We were going to do all these things. We had the botanical park and the zoo and all this stuff planned out. So we go to probation that next day. It was a Thursday. And my probation officer said, I've been overwritten and you have to turn yourself in tomorrow, 7 o'clock. I'm like, you know, that's okay. My parents came down, they got my daughter, my dog, they moved things around in my garage to get my car in there, got the breathalyzer off, suspended my water, did all that for me from the Fort Worth area. And because that's just what I expected my parents to do, that I need help, they come and help. Not realizing the sacrifice that I was putting on my family. But I got into Johnson County, and I sat for 3 months waiting for a bed. And then I start to hear some real stories about Safe P. And so when a chance came for me to call my mom, the first thing she said is, I grew up fundamental Baptist, hellfire and brimstone, anything that you do, depression, sex, drugs, horrible thoughts, you're the problem, not anything else. You're the problem. So she said, what the hell were you thinking? And I'm like, excuse me? Do you know what you signed up for? I said, well, yeah, Safe P. Do you know what that stands for? Well, no, but I've heard girls talk about it, and it's, they just go and they do groups and all this kind of thing. And she says, no, Gina, it's prison with groups. You're going to either Burnett or Gatesville. I went to Gatesville, which was further from family. And it wasn't a 6 month program. It wasn't a 2 or 3 month program. You don't just go in there, work your steps, work with your counselor, and get out. 9 freaking months. Plus the 3 I'd been in county. I didn't have time for this. I had already, the summer before, working with an outreach program in the Fort Worth area, or several years before, said, I will get you in. Let's see. I went in 09. Yeah. Early 09. She says, I've got a program in Dallas. I will take you over there. I will pick you up for your probation meetings. I will pick you up for your doctor's office. I will bring your meds over to you. I will bring you for the weekend to see your daughter. All this kind of thing. 90 days? I don't have time for that. I've got a life. I've got a dog. I've got plants. I'm going to spend time with my daughter. Wow, talk about shooting yourself in the foot, cutting your nose off to spite your face. I mean, all those cliches, that's what I did. But again, I feel like it was God keeping me ignorant just long enough. So my mom drove me to turn myself in. I took a handful of the last anxiety meds I had, so I was chilled. And so reality hits a few weeks later when these girls are talking about this, so I finally pull chain, and I go to Gatesville. And I cried for 3 solid months. I had not cried, I don't think, since I was 8 years old, because that was weakness. I didn't cry because I could drink and lose that need to cry. I didn't have to cry. I was stronger than that. The alcohol made me stronger than that. Until I got to thinking about things, and then I turned into the sloppy, weepy drunk. But, you know, I was doing all this alone, so nobody else really knew the extent of things going on. I finished Safe P, and that's where I got the mental health and the substance abuse, and I saw how the two fed off each other. And it's like, you know, two cats fighting. You can pull one away, but this one's still mad. And then you bring it back, and it's still mad, and it's going to fight with this one, and then this one fights back. And I got my psych meds straight. I figured out, gee, I am an addict, because I walked into Safe P and went, oh, no. I am not like these women. I have a bachelor's degree. Didn't use it, but I had one. I have a car. I have a Shih Tzu. I got him from a rescue. I am that kind of person. I have plants. I am a gourmet cook. I know where my children are. Now, they weren't in my custody. That didn't occur to me, you know. My poor 8-month-old daughter had been living with a raging alcoholic, and then my son at 10 had to go and live with my parents because he was being bullied at our complex, and I couldn't think straight enough to move out of there because that would have put me further away from the baby I didn't have custody of, but I was willing to send my oldest 300 miles away. That made sense because he was going with Don, Nana, and they loved him and he loved them. So screwed up. And at 25, my son has still got some anger issues going on. But he's not an addict. Yet, maybe. I don't know. Fortunately, my daughter grew up with stupid on a regular basis. And she has realized her first freshman year in college, she went out on Halloween with her friend, and if anybody knows College Station, Northgate's the bar area, and they went down to Northgate, and she's telling me this story, and I'm going, oh no, oh no. And she said, they spilled drinks all over my dress, they ruined my Ivanka Trump shoes, they were acting stupid. What is the point? Baby, that's just it. What is the point? And she says, I'm never doing that again. That is ridiculous. And so the next time an opportunity came where they went someplace for somebody, a party at a ranch, she rode with people. That girl was drinking and said she was okay. And my daughter said, no, I'll drive. And she drove everybody home. That's been one of the most magnificent things in my sobriety, is that my children learned from my mistakes. But not just them. I learned. My last counselor at Safe P, because I rose in structure in Safe P because I am one of those people. I am a conformist. I want to be acknowledged. So when I became house and started working for the counselor, my counselor told me, he said, you know, you really ought to consider this field. He said, you've been using a long time. And I got to thinking about it, and I had used 33 years of 48. I had that knowledge. I had extensive knowledge of addiction. I had dabbled in drugs back in the day, but like I said, I'm lazy and I'm not willing to go out looking for and searching for when I can just walk down to the convenience store because I'm too drunk to drive, but I can walk down just, you know, I'm lazy. I want everything easy. And so when I got through with Safe P, and I realized after about month four, wow, my head really cleared, and I realized, oh my gosh, what have I been doing to my family? A lady had come in, and she was just ecstatic. I get to write my daughter, jumping up and down. And I'm going, so? I get to write my daughter. My daughter writes me, my parents. Her daughter was in another prison, and had both wardens had to be given approval to have them write, and I'm going, oh, wow. Okay, not only do I know where my kids are, and they're pretty safe. My son was safe. My daughter was pretty safe. But I wasn't writing them in prison. And I thought, oh, what does my family feel like having to write me in prison and see me and come up here and visit me in my whites and knowing that it takes this long because you've got to get strip searched in and out and in and out. And they're patting down my family and looking under the car, and they're like, what's going on? I said, I don't know. I've never come in as a visitor, so I don't know what they do with you guys. As long as they don't make you take your clothes off, you're good. But at 4 months, I realized it wasn't just what was I doing to my family. It's what am I doing to myself and why? It wasn't making anything better. I was spending money I didn't have. And the money I did have, I wasn't even sending to help support my son living with my parents. I was using it to try and juggle so that I could keep the bills paid and still stay drunk. And I was alone. I'd go to meetings, and I chose these meetings in this little town where I lived, and it was all, you know, majority older men with oxygen tanks, let's just put it that way. Very few women, nobody my age, male or female, there was just nothing there. And so that was my excuse to just not go to meetings. Because there's not, I have to drive 20 minutes. I'm not driving 20 minutes. Of course, one night it was icing over. It was going to ice over the weekend when I lived in Fort Worth. And I took the Northwest Highway exit into Dallas to get liquor on a bridge that had already iced over, because I was going to be iced in over the weekend and I couldn't. Tarrant County was dry. They didn't have liquor. Man, I took it nice and slow. I was just slightly buzzed, but I was out of liquor and I had to go. And I kept thinking about all these things that I had done and situations I had put my children and their safety in at risk. And then the multiple times I had put my own safety at risk, and then not just me, everybody out there on the road, everybody else's family, everybody else's children and grandchildren. And I thought, oh my gosh, I am so arrogant and so full of myself that I didn't care about anybody. So I got out of Safe P and realized that I had to get away from a toxic relationship. Came down here to the San Antonio area, and I moved in with my parents, now 50 years old, moving back in home with mom and dad. So much fun. Every time a news thing came on about drunk driving or wrong way driving, they had this huge discussion about it. And I'm sitting there going, they're talking about me. Now, at this point, I'd had a year and a half sobriety. But I kept listening to what my counselor had said about choosing this field. I already had, like I said, I had 33 years of practice. I knew addiction in and out. I started school, and The next month, my father was burning brush, and the fire behind him flared up. He was wearing polyester. It burned him 30% third degree. He was 75, and he lived 2 weeks at SAMHSA. And I couldn't leave my mother. I was getting ready to move into San Antonio, close to SAC, where I could do this LCDC program. And I couldn't leave her out there. So I finished my program mostly online and then some coming into town. And so I couldn't drink. I told my dad before they stopped the heart medications, I said, I promise I'll take care of Mom. I promise I won't drink because I can't take care of Mom if I drink. Because she annoys me like crazy if I drink. And that was my excuse in the past, was that my mother just doesn't understand. She's has no boundaries. She has no filter. She's nosy. All the codependent and boundary books were written about her until I went back and read them again and realized they were written about me. But I stayed sober. And it was a couple of years after my dad had died, so at this point I had been sober 5 years, and I realized, oh my gosh, I hadn't thought about alcohol in forever. In the meantime, I'm getting up and going to 7 o'clock meetings. I'm on days that I didn't have school, I was doing the noon meetings. I was meeting again with two or three women to just keep my options open and have that much more availability, because I knew that's what I needed. I needed more than one person to be accountable to, because I'm lazy. And if one person doesn't catch it, somebody else might. And so I had these three ladies that all had different zones of me. And I'd start to slack off, and they're like, no, you can't make excuses. You can't use school. You can't use taking care of your mother. You can't use, oh, the cat got sick or the house needs cleaning. And they kept me on that path, and I finished my degree. And then it was like, well, you're going to have to go to Hondo to work at the prison to get a practicum and an internship. It's like, I am not willing to drive that. Well, there's a place out in Bernie, and I live out near the Guadalupe River. And he says, but it's real she, and they don't really have a place for, you know, but you can try. And I went out there, and within the week, I was hired. I started out at this place doing direct care, and so I can do meds and UAs and intakes and discharges and all that kind of thing. Then our chef was hurt, and so we all pitched in, and I got to spend time in the kitchen. I'm still a counseling intern because I hadn't taken my tests, only because I'm also a lazy student. I just haven't taken the test. And when I got, though, to this interview, the program director said, now, you know that this job is not going to keep you sober. Working with other women suffering from addiction is not going to keep you sober. I said, well, I've got the meetings I go to. I've got these women I work with. And she says, good. And after about a year, she calls me and says, you're not going to as many meetings as you were, are you? How many sponsors are you working with now? Well, I've got one. What happened to the other two? Well, I just don't have time. You know how it is at work. I mean, we're crazy. She says, uh-uh. That's just not going to work. You're not the same person when you're not taking care of that part of you. And that addict part of you will always be there. And then again, I felt that sense of shame and guilt. Is, oh, that addict, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a horrible person. I'm terrible. And then I got to thinking, wait a minute, it's been this many years. I'm not drinking. I had asthma growing up. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm left-handed. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm blue-eyed, not ashamed of that. Those are all things that I can't help. The only thing I could have helped was that first drink. That was my one and only choice. And when my brain changed and I became an addict, I had no more choice. And the alcohol took over. The alcohol ruled. And as long as I allowed myself to keep going back to that, saying, well, I can't help it. No, I could have helped it, and that one choice is gone. That's my past. I'm not willing to relive it. At this point, I realized, it's like, wait a minute. Left-handed, blue-eyed, born blonde, asthma. I'm an addict. I'm an alcoholic. And it's kind of like the things that people that had mental health disorders went through, and then the AIDS clients went through. What does the face of depression look like? Well, this one. What does the face of AIDS look like? This one. What does the face of an alcoholic look like? This one. And I've been able to take that part of me and look at my history and say, yes, I learned all these lessons, and I will not repeat them again. Here a while back, I couldn't sleep, and I was up at 2:30 in the morning, couldn't sleep, so I made coffee at 4:30. By the time I got to work at 7, I was wired, and then by about noon, I had that hungover feeling. My mouth was dry, my eyes were itchy, my head ached, I was sick to my stomach, and I'm thinking, to think that I did, you know, what am I going to do about it? I'm going to go home tonight, eat dinner early, and go to bed. But I got to thinking, why would I have done this to myself every day, knowing that every day that I drank, the next morning was going to be the same, with no problems fixed. More problems arose. I wasn't getting phone calls. I was ignoring family. My kids, they were being taken care of, so I was good with that, not realizing the destruction that was going to wreak on their lives, or the potential for it. I finally got to the point where I could accept that I am an alcoholic, but it took me until like year 6 before I was okay with that. But I figure year 6, 33 years of practice, that's what, a fifth of the time it took me to be able to embrace that part of myself. I'm okay with it, and I have come to discover through working with so many ladies that the intelligence, our intelligence is up there. That's why we're so hard to work with, is because we got this. I know what to do, and we don't. And I realize every day that I go to work, every night that I have to take homework to, because there's no time to do paperwork. This is what being an addict's all about, is continuing to do that right thing, continuing to be there and know that when my kids call me and they need help with something, or, you know, I need some money. I've got some money now. Never had some money. I mean, I thought having some money was $20, you know, but had some money. I've got the time. I've got the cognitive skills to look at a map and get my daughter to Houston without crash and burning one way or the other. And it's so nice to have ladies like Lori come into my life and call back and say, man, this part of my life fell apart. And it's like, well, what are you doing about it? This is what I'm doing about it. And knowing that every time I stumble, all I have to do is get up and ask for help. It's dirty in the trenches, but it's even dirtier in your own pity party. And it is so nice to have met Lori. I had another client. We had our 10-year anniversary at the center. And she came up and said, Gina, it's been 2 years since I left. Can we be friends now? Because that's code of ethics. I have to wait 2 years. It was so nice to have. She still really wants to be my friend. Lori calls me up to ask me to do this. And I'm going, what is wrong with you? Why are you calling me? Get a life. And to know that maybe something in my past, in my history, might be beneficial to Lori in her future, in her history, her future history, her future. That's what means the world to me, is that I can drive. It took me 2 hours to get here. And the traffic was crazy in San Marcos, not Austin. But I got here, and it's like, this is what it's about, is continuing to reach out and give people the information that they need, and then let them take with it and do what they know they need to do. And if they falter and they fall, that's okay. Here, let's just go around that trench and come back up another way. So I'm Gina. I'm an alcoholic, among other things. And what is today, the 10th? 11th. Okay. 15 days, 9 years. And so, thank you, Lord.